The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts says Jimmy Garoppolo. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I'm joined.
You're scraping the bottom of the barrel now. You just can't wait to get to Thanksgiving, huh?
Well, I was trying to think of something that reflected last night's game.
I mean, his name is Gar, not Gur, anyway.
Garoppolo.
It's not G-R-oppolo, it's G-A. Garoppolo.
Yeah. The point is that Lenny pronounces it differently. I'm Mina Kimes. That's Dominique Foxworth. We're going to talk about last night's game, but a little bit of housekeeping. I am not doing a preview podcast this week because of Thanksgiving, so we're also going to talk about the Thanksgiving games instead of winners and wuss in addition to last night's game. The Thanksgiving games are kind of good, Dominique. I'm like actually looking. I feel like this is probably the best they've been in a while.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to all of them. They all seem like did we have to pay for several weeks? Because there are some really bad weeks of football. And frankly, this weekend isn't that great either. But we got this really good game or these few really good games. And we had Vikings-Cowboys was supposed to be good. But it didn't turn out to be.
Yeah. But I think that's part of what makes this Thanksgiving good, which is you got a team where I'm not going to pick upsets for them necessarily, but because of what the favorites are coming off of, or, you know, in some cases, teams that have lost, I think they're all a little bit more interesting maybe than they would have seemed a few weeks ago. You know, or maybe a few weeks ago we would have said the Bills are going to crush the Lions, the Vikings are going to crush the Patriots. I do think the Cowboys are probably going to crush the Giants. But there's interest there. But the last night's game, less interesting. It was a domination after the beginning. It was a little bit closer in the jump, the beginning. I stuck it out until the beginning of the fourth quarter. How about you?
Yeah, I got to 31. When they got to 31, I wasn't up for Kittle's last touchdown. That I was like, all right, we're good. I have I get up this morning too, so that's a 6 a.m. meeting, so I had to get to bed as soon as I could. I watched a little Love is Blind. No, I couldn't help it. I had to check out a little.
What episode are you on with Love is Blind?
I think I just did 4. And
I'm on 4 too.
Bring Andrew back. Okay. Bring back fake tears, Andrew. I want fake tears, Andrew, back because and I thought I didn't like Raven, but she grew on me. And also Bartice, I've had enough. I've had enough of everything Bartice related.
No spoilers.
I didn't spoil anything. I didn't spoil anything. That was just all generic stuff. That is okay.
Some people maybe they think Andrew's still in it. Okay. last night's game didn't change my mind about anything necessarily. I do think the Niners offense looks better than they did a few weeks ago. It feels like they are rounding into form. I thought in this game in particular, Arizona comes out with a pretty clear plan to stop the run. Niners didn't have success doing so. It was encouraging to see Kyle Shanahan completely go away from it, recognizing that they had an advantage through the air. And you had Jimmy Garoppolo passing like crazy in the first half. Then the second half, when Arizona switched it up, they go to the run. I think my question for you, Dominique, is like, how impactful do you think Christian McCaffrey is? We talked about the potential, I think, a few weeks ago. Now we've seen a few weeks of it. Where are you at watching what he's doing in this offense?
We should talk more because, like, I feel like once you start saying things, it reminds me of stats that I should have looked. Not reminds me. It makes me think of stats that I should have looked up because immediately I want to know yards over expected for Christian McCaffrey. Because while I was watching the game, that's what I saw. I was like, you know what? Right there is where someone else would have been tackled. You know, like, this is where an average running back would have been tackled.
The whole team.
Yeah, I know.
The whole damn team.
But it didn't used to be that for Christian. I mean, it didn't used to be that for the running back also.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be like, all right, the running back, on a good day, they'll get you 6 or 7, and maybe they'll break off a long one because they have incredibly fast running backs. But it seemed like there was the situation where it was a 6 or 7 yard run and Christian would turn it into 15 or more. And also his impact on the passing game. And also they split him out at a receiver and put Debo in the backfield. And and then ran the ball there, which, like, the advantages, the challenges, the confusion.
This is what we worried about. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just,
I mean,
Jimmy Garoppolo.
It's a nightmare. You never know what any of these players are going to do in the structure of a play, yeah. What the intention is. And then the fact that they're all just so talented, yes, with the ball in their hands. Not that Arizona's defense is a tackling machine.
They struggle.
But good Lord, every single Niners skill player, Brandon Ayuk, I feel like we should acknowledge, is playing so well right now. Just the route running from him is truly special. But, like, it's funny to me. On first take this morning, I was saying I thought Jimmy Garoppolo was playing well. Yeah. And he is. He is playing well. He did a couple of things. He, like, made one play with his feet on it. He scrambled through the kid.
I was saying MVP.
Okay, Jimmy, you never do that. He never. But it is pretty funny that he finished that game with a negative completion percentage over expectation. So just most people who listen to this podcast know what CPOE is, but it's basically what a quarterback's completion percentage is relative to what it should be based on the difficulty of throws, openness, defenses, etc. That's not shade on Jimmy Garoppolo. That's just how much this offense is rolling right now. And it's play design. It's the skill players. It's the competition in this case. But they look really dangerous.
We don't have to do this here, but I feel like you're going to make me be the one that has to tell the truth about Jimmy Garoppolo. So let's not do it at all. Let's just bask in the greatness of Jimmy's greatness right now. Things are awesome. Their defense is good. It's going to be great.
All he has to do is not throw interceptions, man.
See, you're going to make me do it. You're going to make me do it. That's not all he has to do, is the problem. At some point, if they want to win a Super Bowl, they're going to have to win three or four games in a row. And the quarterback is – there are opportunities for other people to overcome deficiencies. At some point in their Super Bowl run, something's not going to work and something's going to fall apart. Be it the defense is going to get cooked, or the running game is going to disappear, or the receivers are not going to get the yak, or the game plan is not up to par. Something is going to be deficient. And that's when you're going to need Jimmy to do something. And he can't. Or he hasn't. The probability of him being able to do that seems low. So that's the other thing. Is like, I'm not being definitive. There's a chance, a 25% chance, 15% chance that he can find lightning in a bottle and make the plays that you need to make. And there's also the chance that, like, I point back to the Broncos' most recent Super Bowl championship as the example. There's also a chance that someone else can be that hero. Someone else can be Von Miller and overcome whatever is deficient. The quarterback has more impact on the game than anyone else, so that's why people pay a lot and look for them, and they have the chance to overcome those deficiencies. They have the opportunity to overcome those deficiencies, but there's a chance that they make a run to the Super Bowl and win it with Jimmy Garoppolo. It's just slimmer because Jimmy is average. You made me do it.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance they'll run into a defense that is well-coached and good at disguising their intentions and fools Jimmy Garoppolo. Forces that, you know, it tends to be the same exact look that he gets that leads him into trouble over the middle of the field. And I think it's entirely possible. I will say, you know, the defense is as advertised. I want to go back to the Chiefs game. I know that they're missing some guys there, and I want to, because I've been trying to, I think we're at a point now in the season where we can, like, really say, okay, who, you know, try to take stock of who's the best defense, and, like, is it the Cowboys, is it the Broncos, is it the Niners? Because the Niners really do look so complete. They're so good at every level. They're so well coached. I love the adjustments that they make as the games go along, that D'Amico Ryan's defensive coordinator makes. So, you know, no, certainly a Super Bowl caliber defense. But yeah, it just comes down to,
I mean, you could throw a couple other teams in that best defense conversation, but
what other teams? New England?
They may not. Yeah.
The Jets?
The New England and the Jets came to mind. They both came off good defensive performances against bad quarterbacks, mind you, but both are really good defenses week in and week out. I tend to give, and I know that the analytics could try their best to control for the fact that some of these teams' offenses aren't good. But I tend to give the teams with, like, hopeless offenses, I give their defense a little more credit because the psychological toll it takes to go out there and be like, we got to hold them to 10 or we can't win. It's exhausting to do that week in and week out. It's really impressive. I'm looking at you, Broncos. I'm looking at you, Jets. You are seen by me.
You could argue the Patriots. We're going to talk about them in a second. But that is
you cannot argue it because that is also a fact.
It is just fact. Let's just wrap quickly on Monday Night Football. So Arizona, you know, obviously Colt McCoy, very conservative game plan. As a result, the Niners defense is too good to be with a conservative game plan where you just kind of dink and duck your way down the field. It feels like the season's over.
Yeah.
You know, I guess Hollywood Brown they're going to win some games down the stretch just because Kyle will be back. Hollywood Brown will be back. Yeah. I think the offense with him and Hopkins playing together has the potential to be decent. It's just too flawed of a roster, and it was that way from the beginning. I think it's not too early to start thinking about, okay, how can they actually fix this next year, and do they have the resources to do so?
I fully expected Cliff to pull out all the stops last week and this week, because it's not just a perceived tension between him and Kyler. Like, it feels like it's genuine, where people want to blame Cliff and Cliff probably wants to blame Kyler. I fully expected him to do everything within his power to like show that Colt McCoy, and I guess he probably did in a primetime game, he really could have shifted this conversation and this opinion and taken the like power position here, which it sounds sad to talk about this between a coach and a quarterback, but they haven't gotten where they want to go. And you got to point at somebody. It's got to be one of that trifecta: quarterback, coach, or general manager.
I could argue two of that trifecta.
I too agree with you.
I think putting Colt McCoy in there, though, was like a good case study for why this offense isn't good enough. Not that Colt McCoy is a great quarterback, but, you know, he is like a functional air raid quarterback, right? You can put him in and ask him to point and shoot. The problem is this offense doesn't have the talent to work in the NFL. And Cliff hasn't shown that he can overcome his talent deficit with scheme. You know, he runs a scheme that is very dependent on talent. And I think you just see that week after week. You certainly saw that on display here in a game where their offense was just so outmatched from a talent-wise perspective against San Francisco. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess by have the talent, what do you mean? You think that they don't have... Are you saying that the air raid offense, in order to be effective, you need some sort of talent advantage? Or
you need
that
multiple skill players who can win one-on-one.
Right. Okay.
They don't have that.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. We agree. I thought you were arguing that they aren't talented enough to succeed. I think they are talented enough.
No, I'm talking about in the context of his
exactly.
offense.
Yeah, which is
just like, hey, do we have a bunch of dudes who can win?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, is the air raid is you're going to find those matchups and make them pay, and they don't have too many of them.
I saw a chart of Colts passing attempts in this game, and it was just like all the left side of the field, because that's where they line up DeAndre Hopkins, who, as he was punished for pointing out, was doubled on multiple occasions. Very whack taunting call, by the way. It just isn't sustainable. But that said, again, like when Hollywood Brown comes in, he is fairly talented, I think. And so I think they'll probably look functional, especially against bad defenses. All right, San Francisco. Oh, one more thing I wanted to say about San Francisco that really struck me in this game. I mean, granted, the Arizona pass rush is not very good and they're very dependent on the blitz, which San Francisco is really good against. I thought at the beginning of the year that the Niners offensive line would be an issue for them, particularly on the interior. And that has been far from the case. And we talk about these skill players elevating Jimmy Garoppolo. He is protected back there.
Yeah. I saw that. I mean, the things that we could celebrate from Jimmy Garoppolo were in large part a part of it is a function of him having time. I think that it's very easy to, not easy. It's a lot harder to go from one side of the field to the other side of the field if, one, you don't have the protection, or two, you can't trust that the protection is there. As you see that also sometimes, is that the protection's there for this one incident, but guys who are not comfortable having that protection aren't comfortable with making it to those extra reads.
And that's, again, where I feel like this McCaffrey ad was so significant, because Garoppolo panics or has panicked under pressure in the past. but he's never had an outlet quite like a guy who creates. I mean, you could like you Debo could have been that guy, but Debo, his plays are within the structure of the offense, right? Like he's not the check down guy. He's the guy who's going to run the 8 yard slant and get you 20 off the middle of the field.
Garoppolo and this is my point.
Out of the backfield is just helping him so much. No, sorry.
Yeah, McCaffrey. Yeah, and this is my point about my point about beating the blitz in any situation that it seems like some people don't understand is that you don't beat the blitz or you don't get teams to stop blitzing by picking it up consistently. You get people to stop blitzing by breaking their back. And if you have a player like Christian McCaffrey, where you put him in man coverage, not only is he going to beat the man coverage, he might break the tackle and go for 30 or 40. So you're going to get blitzed less because teams are afraid. They're like, all right, if it's a zone blitz, then we're going to end up, there is no good matchup because if he's in the backfield and you zone blitz, he gets out of the backfield. He can only be covered by a linebacker, a defensive end, or a safety. Most people who play those positions are mismatched for Christian McCaffrey. So, yeah, he might get 5 or 6, and then the defense will line up and blitz again on the next third down because they don't care about 5 or 6. But he also might get 25 or 26, and then they ain't never blitzing again.
So, I'm pulling up something because you got me interested in finding a particular stat, which is...
There we go.
This is great podcasting.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So this is perfect. This is gorgeous. What a gorgeous stat. Okay. So this is a good example of why yards per attempt are not a good way to measure quarterback play on their own. I saw this in the packet last night. Jimmy Garoppolo leads the NFL in yards per attempt versus the blitz. The Niners have been very good against the blitz. Guess where he ranks in air yards per attempt against the blitz?
30th.
32nd.
No, I knew it couldn't be that bad.
We're not. That's not. That is a positive reflection on this Niners offense. Yep. That is not the Garoppolo slander. They're really, really good at getting yards after the catch. All right, that's enough talk about this game. We think the Niners are for real. The Bills and the Lions. So let's talk about this from the Lions side first, because they're coming across. It's been a 3-game win streak for Dan Campbell.
Yep.
And his squad. What's interesting to me, Dominique, is like they've really, it feels like this is the way Dan Campbell wants to play. Like at the beginning of the season, there were this team that was just, you know, putting up massive numbers on offense and just getting destroyed on defense. And they've really simmered down to the point where like they become like a very good rushing team. You know, they're not airing the ball out the way they were at the beginning of the season, but they're actually playing much better defense. Granted, competition matters a little bit, but you know, I feel like they just look much more cohesive and less like this team has to put up 40 points to win every week kind of thing.
Yeah, they look better. better than what we are accustomed to seeing from the Lions, even the Dan Campbell Lions in recent years. So yeah, it's encouraging, but I think let's not throw a parade. Let's not plan the parade just yet. the Bills win was more impressive than I think that most people would say, just looking at the box score and looking at the teams that played. Like, I think that's a testament to the Bills and a testament to the Lions. It's like, yeah, they were a legitimate fight, and they will be on Thanksgiving also.
Well, you know, the Bills-Brown game kind of went in with two questions. Can the Bills stop the run? Because, they'd had some trouble in previous weeks, and they did that. They absolutely contained Nick Chubb and company. And then can they run the ball? And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I was screaming run the damn ball in the first quarter at my TV screen because the Browns had the worst run defense in the NFL. And I think non-Josh Allen's had one carry in the first quarter. It was really frustrating, especially because Josh looked off. Like, I don't know if I suspect it's something to do with his elbow, but he was like kind of off target on some of the short stuff. So coming into this game, Dominique, I mean, this is a Detroit team that has really, really struggled to stop the run, but actually did well against New York, has a lot of issues in their secondary. How would you approach this if you're Buffalo?
What game are we talking about? If you're Buffalo...
The Bills Lions. Sorry, if you're the Bills offense facing this Lions defense.
Yeah. I think that what I saw from Josh Allen was concerning. And I think... I guess concerning is the wrong word. Like, I'm not concerned, but it does seem like in the last several weeks there's been... I've been kind of dismissing all of this Josh Allen conversation as no big deal. He's going to have his ups and downs. That's the style of play. I think... The fact that they could win without him was the, or yeah, the fact, not without him, but without him being everything this week was impressive to me. Hopefully they can do it again against the Lions, because I think the Lions are a team that they're capable of doing it against. But I do think that this is a legitimate test, like I mentioned before. So that beating the Browns, I think, is less of a test, but stopping the run was important to them. And we'll see what they do this week. But I think that's the plan. I don't know. I didn't answer your question. I meandered because I didn't have an answer. But
well, it's hard to answer it without knowing what Josh Allen's condition is, I mean, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the plan is to try to do it without Josh as much as possible until you can't. And then you dive on Josh's back and hope he can carry you to the promised land.
I mean, the Lions, you know, like it was an encouraging performance against the Giants up front. Lynn McNeil and Aiden Hutchinson, you know, that were very good in this game. But behind that defensive line, massive issues on this Lions defense still at linebacker, at cornerback. There's some injuries there. So, like, part of me is like, well, you should be able to run the ball on them like you did last week. But, like, if Josh Allen isn't having problems throwing it, they should be able to cook him through the air. I do think on the other side, though, it is similar to last week. It's a significant test for a Bills defense that's, you know, gotten some reinforcements back, but still missing guys, because Detroit's offensive line, arguably one of the best in the NFL, you know, they're going to have time and they're going to be able to get push. So, it's challenging.
And Jared Goff is pretty good. He's okay. Like, I do think the challenge is there for, yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate challenge for the Bills that I don't think 2 weeks ago we would have said was a legitimate challenge for the Bills, given how the Bills were playing a few weeks ago and how the Lions were playing a few weeks ago. So this game matters. The overarching thing is, I hate to be QB-centric, but the overarching question that looms over this season for them is Josh Allen's elbow okay? And should they have, or should they going forward, give him a rest in order to try to get him healthy again? Because if we are to expect that since the injury, that's the Josh Allen that we're going to have until he gets healthy, then you rest him and try to get him back, because he's too important to the team. So I think that's the most interesting thing for me coming out of this game is, if he seems off again, why? If it's about health, put some ice on that and chill out for a week.
Yeah, if he comes out like sailing screens again, I would be concerned if I were a Bills fan, because that was concerning to see. But then, you know, he'll mix it, it's a little intermittent. Every now and then he looks totally fine and makes, you know, really impressive throws.
That's the thing that... It's the reason why I guess I was hesitant about talking about the defense, because defense improvement or defense being tested matters. But it goes back to the Garoppolo conversation, is some quarterbacks can overcome everything. And Josh Allen has that capability. So if the defense stinks, I'll be like, man, that sucks. But if Josh is balling, like, well, they'll be all right. So like, they need to figure out where Josh Allen is and what they can do to make sure that he is playing at his best and his healthiest come January.
I think Detroit's just going to try to pound him.
That's the move.
You know, they looked
speed it up.
I mean, we'll talk about the Giants' run defense in a second. It's not very good, but Detroit rushing attack has been incredible all season long. Talked about the offensive line, obviously, you know, one of the better run blocking units in the league, but also they have a bunch of dudes. This is what struck me in the Giants game. There's so many running backs, and the fullback too they were using. They were just lining up in 21 throughout. I think actually that was their primary grouping in the game against New York, and it was just a different combinations of backs. Jamal Williams looks incredible. I thought Justin Jackson looked really good for them. You know, DeAndre Swift seems still banged up, so we'll see if they can do it against Buffalo. And I think, you know, with Obviously, I think Buffalo gets back Tremaine Edmonds in this one, which would be enormous. Getting back Matt Milano was a huge difference for them in stopping the run. So I think they'll be able to stop them. And I suspect, you know, win this one, in, unless Josh Allen is more banged up than we thought. All right, let's take a quick break and then talk about the other two games. All right, people, we are brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odds boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today, and get more with every wager. Must be 21 years or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. All right, Giants-Cowboys, a game that I think 2 weeks ago probably looked a little bit closer. Cowboys, of course, coming off of a tremendous beatdown. Minnesota, Giants losing to the aforementioned Lions, and also losing players along the way. This is part of the reason why I'm not super optimistic that this will be a good game. Just offensively, Daniel Jones is up against it, man. Like, that offensive line is missing so many dudes. He was throwing a Richie James, like, Wando Robinson has a great game, then immediately tears his ACL. It just feels like there's too much to overcome, especially facing one of the best defenses in the league.
Yeah, this is an uneventful evening, unless somehow the Giants find a way to win, and then we have to burn down everything we thought we knew about the NFC. Because, like, none of us were surprised. Well, that's not true. The Vikings losing didn't surprise anybody. Them getting destroyed surprises. So, like, the Vikings and the Giants are two of the teams that we all kind of knew that their record was a bit of a lie. So, I appreciate the Cowboys going there and making sure that they made us all look right. They need to do it again this week. Otherwise, then we have to, like, legitimately consider the Giants going forward, which, like, Giants fans don't even legitimately consider them contenders.
I feel bad for Giants fans, though, because I think, not just because, you know, the injuries, but you want it to be able to evaluate Jones, and now with this group around him, it feels impossible, honestly. I mean, this is a terrible, terrible situation. The case for New York would be them running the ball against, you know, I know the Cowboys are coming off of beatdown, but that game got out of hand pretty quickly to the point where Minnesota kind of stopped running. Yep. Obviously, the week before, the Packers had a lot of success, especially with those outside runs. Got to think New York's going to try something similar with Barkley and Breda. I just think this Cowboys defense is so good. Like, I just think they're so good. They're so good. They're so good. And I think they're so good in ways that are almost underappreciated. Like, coming out of that, I was just tweeting about this, coming out of that Minnesota game, everyone was like, wow, the Cowboys pass rush, Micah Parsons, world beaters, which is true. But a big part of the reason why they were able to tee off is Kirk Cousins had no idea what the hell was going on half the time, because they were constantly showing blitz and dropping out, showing man, pivoting to zone, like so much disguise. It's just, they're just really well coached. And yeah, I don't know. I just think they're so impressive.
Yeah, we talked about this last week and how I was pushing back on the idea that the Cowboys need to run the ball more. Not that I don't think they need to run the ball and it shouldn't be important to their success. That's all true. But what's most important is that they score points early. And I think that that's more important. If you can do that while running the ball, yeah, do it, because that's lower risk. There's less chance for turnovers. So if you can run the ball 8 times on a drive and score a touchdown, more power to you. But if you have to throw the ball, I think it's more important to throw the ball and score points and take that risk. Because I think that this defense is so good when they are in when they have a lead attack and they're in you must pass situations. Yeah. So that's what it boils down to for me, is putting their defense in a position where they can be dominant. And I think that is when they can be dominant, is when they can do those disguises and when they can pin their ears back. Good old classic football cliche. And rush the passer.
It's not too dissimilar from San Francisco, right? Like, you know, you can't fall behind against this defense, which is why the Eagles game in a couple weeks is going to be so fantastic and such a good matchup. But yeah, I mean, Cowboys offense looked fantastic last week. One of the best, if not the best, rushing teams in the NFL. Tony Pollard is... I have a question for you. Like, so this last week we saw how Tony Pollard is not just incredible on the ground, but also devastating as a receiver. I think I overused the word devastating, by the way. Need some new... Terrifying? Intimidating?
That's Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
Electric? Electric. I was just thinking electric.
Electric, yeah.
I like that.
I almost feel like they could throw to him even more. I mean, in this last game, they threw him way more than they had all season, because when he's lined up in that backfield, to kind of come back to the San Francisco thing, I think having another weapon that makes this offense more multiple, and then having a quarterback who's extremely good at decision making and, you know, recognizing mismatches before the snap, that's really, really tough to defend.
I'd be interested in how much 21 or 20 personnel that they use with Zeke and Pollard.
They really don't.
Yeah. I'd be interested if I were them in my first 15, I would have at least a couple of plays like that, just to see how the defense responds, because if they respond as most teams would against 21 is in base, then I split Pollard out and go to work. If they respond in nickel, then it's fine. You hand it to Zeke and run it, and you could split Pollard out too, or you could do some sort of like option misdirection with Dak in the backfield. Like, I think that you can't be great at everything. So I'm not saying that they need to be expert at all these different things, but I'd love to just every game I'd have one of those in my first 15 and just see how they react. If they're going to try to match up a linebacker on Tony Pollard, then there's your number one receiver right there. But
they get that matchup a fair amount out of 12 personnel with the two tight ends on the field, which is another also a look that they run really well out of. So it's just
right. That's fair. No, I guess the only reason why I thought 20 or 21 is because then you can leave Zeke back there and line Pollard out. But yeah, you're right. If you can get that matchup in 11, that's fine.
I think both would be incredibly effective, and it's something that Kellen Moore should go to more often. I think one thing I liked about this last game for the Dallas offense is, you know, it felt like Dak was playing in fairly easy mode. Guys were more open than they've been all year. The mismatches were there. And I think it is sustainable Granted, it'll be more difficult against more challenging defenses. I don't think the Giants defense is very challenging. You know, they still get decent play out of, I don't know, Dexter Lawrence up front and whatnot, but they're behind that defensive line at linebacker, secondary super banged up. God, I started this podcast being like, these games are surprisingly good. And I feel like as we talk about them, it becomes more apparent that they're not as good as I thought they would be.
They're interesting. I think it's fair to say that these games are interesting and more interesting than we expected. But this game should not be good. Like, it should not be a nail biter. It should not be close. They're in the NFL. They get paid too. So I don't expect them to go 30 to beat them by 27 points or anything. But I don't. I think we get to the fourth quarter. The Cowboys should not be like biting their nails.
Okay. I bite my nails.
Well, don't.
Like a little bit of shot. I wish I couldn't. Can you time travel back 30 years and tell me not to? All right. Is Patriots-Vikings the best game?
If I could time travel and I use that to stop you from biting your nails, someone should slap the hell out of me. what was your question? My bad.
Is
Can you imagine I put in the effort to figure out how to time travel and I was like, man, let's go find
Yamina. Okay, wait. Like, let's try this. Let's say you have a time machine and you can use it anytime. There's not limited resources. And you're not using it to like do good things or change the fate of history. What's something that you wish you could build a time machine and travel to before this season to tell yourself about something that would happen during this season, just to see the look on your face?
I feel like it has to be focused with the, oh, it's got to be the Broncos, right? It's got to be the Broncos and Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson. Like, that's the one thing that mostly Russell is like, you know who's going to be, like, the worst offense in football and one of the worst quarterbacks in football? And you know who's going to be really good at quarterback? Geno Smith. And Russ is going to be bad. And I would look at me like, come on, man. You tripping.
That's probably the most surprising development of the NFL season, because all the like other stories, like the Miami offense has been awesome. But I think, you know, that was something that people accepted was within the realm of possibility. The Eagles being as good as they are again, that's something like people thought. Yeah. But the Russ, the Seahawks Broncos thing is probably the one.
Okay. Oh, no. So what am I doing? Jeff Saturday would be the head coach of the Colts. I would have laughed in my own face. I forgot. I'm sorry.
That's right. That would have been the most surprising one. You're right. Okay. Patriots-Vikings. So I think this is probably the best game just because of the way the Patriots defense is playing. Starting with that matchup, they're probably going to do some of the things that the Cowboys did against Minnesota in terms of especially the games that they play up front. Patriots like to do that kind of stuff as well. They're very good at using, you know, stunts to free up Matt Judon, simulated pressures to confuse quarterbacks. And then I think they'll also, I wouldn't be surprised if on the back end, they use a lot of disguise. My question for you is, do you think Minnesota can bounce back on offense from, like, how much of what we saw last week do you think was just the game getting out of hand, Cowboys pass rush? We should also note that, by the way, Christian Darrisaw is not going to play in this game, which is pretty big.
Yeah, that matters a lot. So the bounce back is going to be hard. This is not the team that you want to bounce back against, because they are not going to be defensively, they're not going to be ill prepared, and they are not going to, while they may use disguises, they are going to know where Justin Jefferson is at all time, and they're going to have a plan for him on every single snap. And that to me is the key to this offense having some sort of bounce back, is finding Justin Jefferson in ideal situations. So a lot of times they like to use Justin Jefferson, motion him to the slot, and attack cover four and attack zone coverages by creating matchups with Justin Jefferson by moving him into the area where the big guys are. The Pats play so much man, and they also, I'm sure, are aware of this and will probably track him with a DB or double him when he gets in those situations. I don't see him. He's going to have to make tough, miraculous catches or catch a bunch of short routes. They're not going to let him get deep. And if it takes, they're probably also going to be physical, which makes it take longer for the plays to develop, which is going to put a lot of pressure on that offensive line, and Judon's going to eat. So it's going to be hard. And I don't think, I think Belichick and the Patriots are going to enter this game. Their game plan is going to be, we're going to create a sack fumble. We're going to create a negative play. And that is going to be our offensive plan. Not going to let them ruin it. We're going to put the pressure on our defense to control this game and create a short field for us. And at that point, if there is ever an interception or a fumble the very next play, if I'm the Vikings, I'm playing prevent defense, because I fully expect that's how they're going to do it. Like, look for the mistake. Once we get the mistake, then we go for the throat, and then we play conservative the rest of the game.
Yeah. How do you feel generally about this Vikings offense? Because it's been a really interesting season. So, like, Jefferson has obviously been outstanding, and although there are games where he's been taken out through for various reasons. But, and I'm not the first person to point this out, it's odd that, like, Kirk Cousins was this very dominant boot play-action quarterback would use those plays to throw downfield, and that's just not been true this year, which is interesting, right? Because you get Kevin O'Connell coming from Sean McVay offense. I think the thought was, oh, you see that they were good on play action before, they're going to be amazing now. You know, Justin Jefferson, the Cooper Kupp role, all of that. And it feels like watching them, they're a little bit too reliant on those big plays. Like, there's not a lot of consistency, especially throwing to the intermediate part of the field, which is where I thought they would thrive.
Yeah, when you first asked, like, what did I think of them, the first thing I thought was, like, up and down, inconsistent, and, like, they aren't trustworthy. And it's volatile in that you get the good with the bad, where you're like, man, nobody can stop these guys. They got Dalvin Cook running for 30 yards on big plays, and they got the best contested catch guy in the league out there in Jefferson, and a quarterback that's a legitimate, like, franchise quarterback. He's not one of these elite world beaters. And when Derek Shaw is healthy, like, the offensive line protects him. Like, there's reason to believe that they could be, like, really, really good. And then you watch them in one game and all those things come to fruition, and then you see another game where none of it happens. So I don't know whose fault it is, what to blame it on. The point about the boot is a good one, because that's, we've talked about on here before about finding ways to give your quarterback a break. And the boot is one of those ways where there's a couple of nice things about boot action. Is one, you get away from the morass of the middle of the field and reading the defenses. Once you get out there, it's often like, who's open? And it's not if thens, where it's like, all right, if he goes here, then I go there, then I do this. That is like a mental strain on the quarterback, and the accuracy doesn't have to be as crisp. And then there's also this benefit that I think goes underappreciated for boots, is there's a clock for you. And it's like the sideline is kind of your clock as you're working towards that. Now, when it's Micah Parsons chasing you, it's a little different. But generally, in most games, it helps you to get away from that pressure. And why you would take out that easy button in this offense doesn't make sense. Maybe they put it back in this week.
I checked this a few weeks ago, and I haven't updated it since, but the average depth of target was way down on his boots. Which, again, that was really how the Vikings offense used to get a lot of their explosives. You know, I think some of it was defenses keying in a bit on Jefferson, who would be the intermediate to deep target on those plays. And so I do think, you know, the addition of Hockenson certainly will open things up there. And it should open things up, you know, in every game. it just got really out of hand against Dallas. You know, but that said, like we've been discussing, New England's defense is extremely good and extremely capable of executing that kind of game plan too. Their offense, on the other hand, a lot less scary.
Yeah.
So I don't think Minnesota's defense is that great. I've said this. You know, Za'Darius Smith is playing out of his mind this year. You know, obviously Patrick Peterson's been good, but this Patriots offense, man, like next to Zach Wilson or the Jets and Zach Wilson, Mac Jones looked semi-competent because at least he was able to, like, you know, he actually executed a few boots and under center play action game was working and their rushing attack is good, but they are not threatening on that side of the ball at all.
And I don't get it. I mean, I think it comes back to where I started this, is their strategy in this game and most games is hope that the defense can create a short field and don't let Mac mess it up. But far be it for me to criticize the great offensive minds of Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. But as a defensive-minded person, you have to threaten me deep. You have to. Like, you have to do that. For my defense to, like, feel stretched and to respect you and for you to have success on anything short or intermediate, you're going to have to consistently threaten deep. And if you hit them, yeah, that hurts too, but you won't get underneath unless I'm like, oh man, there's a chance they'll go over the top, and they won't let him take shots over the top. And it's really like, it's making his life, Mac Jones that is, it's making his life that much more difficult.
I think they're, so earlier in the season when Mac Jones did throw deep, he was throwing interceptions. And I think they were pretty spooked by that. And, you know, really are not asking him to do a lot right now as a result. That said, if I'm the Vikings defense at Donatel, I play way more aggressively, to your point, as a consequence. Like, that's a defense that plays a lot of pretty soft zone, a lot of off coverage, not super blitz happy. I would change up some of those tendencies in this game, because if you play soft and give the Patriots light boxes, they're just going to methodically work their way up and down the field. You need to pressure Mac Jones. You need to dare him to throw over your heads, and that's how you're going to get interceptions in this one.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it, in my view. And it seems also like it's something that the Patriots are it's a trade they're comfortable with making. It's like they seem comfortable with, all right, we'll get one first down and then punt it. That's cool. We'll throw a couple screens and hope we break one. We're not going to do anything risky. We're just going to hope somebody does something majestic. Maybe we'll run a trick play, but that's it. Like, we're just going to try to hang around and then be there in the fourth quarter and hope that, like, our preparation and execution and comfort in these moments is what's going to rule the day.
They do this thing. They were doing this thing last week where they have Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry in the backfield, which I thought was kind of cool and actually seemed to work pretty well. Evan Lazar, who covers the Patriots for Patriots.com, wrote that they call it the full house formation. I guess it speaks for itself. It's not like about the show or anything. By the way, did you see the graphic on Monday Night Football, the full house video where they had all the
San Niners Francisco thing?
Yeah, they had the Niners players as, like, members of Full House from the intro. It was pretty deranged.
So who was Michelle? Was that the little one's name?
Michelle, did you watch Full House at all?
Yeah, I mean, I know Uncle Jesse, Uncle Joey, so annoying. It's good show. Kimmy. Oh, Kimmy, the neighbor. Who's Kimmy? That's the real wild card.
Who's Kimmy on the Niners?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we have to make Kyle Shanahan the dad, even though personality-wise he doesn't fit. Maybe John Lynch is.
Bob Saget.
Yeah, maybe John Lynch is the dad. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a bad comparison. I don't think it matches up that well at all. I know that Debo is Uncle Joey for sure. That's it. That's it. That's all I know.
Why is Debo Uncle Joey?
I don't know, because he's my favorite.
Jesse was the one who would say cut it out, right?
Oh no, it's the other way around. Jesse's the cool one. Jesse's the cool one. I'm sorry, Debo.
Yeah, that's why.
I'm sorry, Debo. Debo is Jesse, and Joey is. Never mind.
In my next life, I want to be the person who comes up with the news. First of all, I said that's deranged. I meant that as a compliment. I love them. They're incredible. I would be so good. Who do I get in touch with at ESPN? I will send you 10 ideas a week.
That's exactly what you need. More work.
All right. Bills, Cowboys, Vikings?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's the right tone. Yeah.
All right. Bills, Cowboys, Vikings. Happy Thanksgiving.